Welcome to the AMC Stock Story Podcast. I'm your host, Russell Corey, and this is not financial advice, and I am not a financial advisor. This is solely for entertainment purposes as I talk about my experiences of investing in AMC stock and becoming an AMC ape. Episode 5, Things Get Real. You know, it's funny, the Empire Strikes Back is technically episode 5 in the series, probably one of my favorite Star Wars movie, and one of the darkest. And I don't know in my AMC stock story if this is going to be the darkest chapter or not. Something tells me it probably isn't. And I say that not as FUD. I'm an ape. I'm all in on this. And I believe in it. It's why I got into it, and it's why I stay in it. But to say I was naive when I got into AMC would be an understatement. As I've already said, I have a pretty limited investment experience. And I knew, listen, I know the 1%. They do what they want. I know 2008 happened. The banks just took advantage of everything. Yeah, a few institutions got knocked out, but the rest got bailed out by the government. They knew they'd get bailed out. And those people that run those organizations, they all go on to run our financial institutions in the government. And it's very sad, but it unfortunately does appear to be a very corrupt system. However, I thought, well, there are, you know, you could still play the stock market. You know, every once in a while you hear about some insider trading, you know, someone going to jail. Like they'll send Martha Stewart to jail. They'll send, you know, the college cheating scandal. You know, they sent that actress to jail, one of those parents that, you know, cheated to get their kids into college. And I'm not trying to excuse that. But when you look at some of the other malfeasance that goes on and nobody gets punished, it's pretty remarkable at times. Well, anyway, things weren't always so bad in this dark period. It started off really good. I mean, I made these investments. I made these decisions. It would have been nice to have gotten in on AMC in January, February, March, April. I required a lot of faith. And like I said, I just wasn't into the movement. I just didn't know anything about it. It barely got on my radar in January. And even after January, I didn't really get into it. But in May, it got on my radar, and that's when I got into it. And I still got in at a fairly decent stage, or so I thought. And we were able to get in before the big push to 72 and the high in the mid-60s, where the stock stayed at for a little while. And it felt awesome. I would drive around. I'd be playing music that made me feel good. It's funny, I was never a big Kiss fan, but you know, there were a few Kiss songs that I would play on YouTube. I Want to Hear It Loud, and I Was Made for Loving You, Baby. Just these Kiss songs. I think I listened to a lot of books on tape, and I listened to a book about Cheap Trick, Kiss, in the 70s and 80s, you know, about these bands touring and stuff, and you hear about these songs, and that's what drove me to listen to the songs on YouTube and start playing them. And I think it was just that initial period listening to the book when I was investing in AMC and just listening to the songs. But it was, you know, they call it the era good feeling. Like, it felt great. I felt smart. You know, like I said, I had made a lot of money with my investments. I reached out to my friends. I reached out to my father and my father-in-law, and I got them both to invest in AMC. Certainly not what I was investing, but you know, it was significant. And they both got in just under $50, high 40s. So to me, as long as the stock stayed above 50 bucks, you know, I was okay. I was making money. My father and my father-in-law were making money. And the friends that I knew that had invested, that I knew they were making money too. So what happened? Well, you know, I don't know. I think slowly I I realized that we were not in control of this stock price. You know, I don't know what happened in the beginning. I wasn't, like I said, I really only got into it in the mid-30s, and it climbed, you know, quickly into the 40s, 50s, and into the 60s, and everything felt good. And we just kept waiting for it to blast off from the 60s. And then it trickled down into the 50s. Okay, well, that's not great, but, you know, we still had money. We're still in good shape. And it was this way for most of June. You know, got into the 60s, stayed in the 50s, and you just kept waiting for the breakout moments, and it didn't happen. And then, and you know, it's funny. I even made a video. I was so tired of watching the stock in the 50s. I made a video of, and I just made these visualization slides of the AMC stock price slowly climbing in value till it went from like 50 bucks to 100 and 200, 300, 400, 1,000, you know, 2,000, 3,000, and it climbs all the way to 500,000. So I made these slides just to help me visualize it a little bit. And I even made a YouTube video of it and put that on YouTube. You can go on YouTube, and if you search AMC Russell Corey, you should be able to, that it should come up for you. But it's a visualization of AMC going to the moon again. It's not financial information. It's just for entertainment purposes only. And right around the time I put this video up, we got into July, and then the stock really started going down. Now you say, well, did people start selling? People were losing faith in AMC? Well, maybe a little bit. Mostly what people think happened is the hedge funds seriously attacked this stock. Like ladder attacks, they would, you know, borrow shares and short against it. And the other thing that people were saying was happening is that, you know, the hedge funds, they would, if they needed to buy the stock, they would buy it in the dark pools, which means it doesn't go on record at first. Eventually, maybe it has to be accounted for, but not for a while. And then if they have to sell it, that's when that goes on record. They do that in the front. It's like you think of the front of the shop where everything's listed and goes immediately to the ticker and affects that price. And then there's the back of the shop where they can kind of, you know, hide it out. These dark pools were arranged so big trades could happen outside of the market, and that way they wouldn't spook the market. Like someone explained it this way, like let's say a company wants to buy a million shares of a stock at a dollar, right? Well, if they start buying those shares, a million of those shares for a dollar, by the time they have bought, and this is all going to the market, by the time they've bought that millionth share, it could have skyrocketed. You know, it could be $100 a share at that point, which wasn't what they wanted to do. The same thing. The dark pools were set up so that transaction could kind of take place off the books at the start till it was complete, and then it would go to the market. And that's how the dark pools are explained to me. Of course, the system's abused. So now, you know, what people are saying is, if you and I buy AMC stock through certain brokerages, it gets transferred to the, you know, ultimately the people that also control the hedge funds, and they can not report that stock for a certain period of time. So if you buy the stock, AMC stock, it doesn't affect the price immediately. You know, imagine if you're in a basketball game and the opposing team, they get to control the scoreboard. So if you make a basket, they don't control the scoreboard. They say, well, we're not going to put that on the board yet. We're going to wait on your point. But if they score a basket, they immediately put it on the board. And if you believe in this naked shorting and doing all the other things, they could just sit there and keep pushing their point buttons and say, well, we're going to score those points eventually, but we're going to go ahead and give us those points now. And that's kind of what, you know, counterfeit stocks and naked shorting and all of that is. And anyway, so that's how the price is going down. And people say it's manipulation, that it's not the honest stock price. So around this time, I started watching all these videos, just trying to get an understanding of, you know, what things are. And, you know, I started seeing videos from Lou versus Wall Street. And he introduced this idea that there's two systems. There's two sets of books. And there's the public number that we see on the ticker. And then because the hedge funds are hiding all these other shares off the books, which aren't going to be reported yet, yet they know they're there and they know when they hit what it's going to do to that value, they have another set, they have another number for what AMC stock is actually worth on the secondary book system. Some people call it the real price. And there were a few leaks on Twitter at the time. This was in June. People saying, hey, that you know, the real price of AMC is like $1,000 or $1,200 or $1,500. And Lou would try to talk about this. Anyway, it was a pretty unsettling feeling. And the stock went below 50. And now I felt bad because I had encouraged my father, my father-in-law, and friends to buy this stock. And now it was below what they were had paid for it. And then it went below, our average number was probably in the low 40s, and it went below that. And at a certain rate, period of time, when you realize it's not the AMC apes that are selling this stock, it's not us that's selling it, it's being manipulated, and nothing's being done to protect it. People would tweet to the SEC, like, what's going on? Do something. You never hear anything being done. And a lot of people think that, you know, that I don't know what's going on with the SEC. It would be nice if somebody said, we've looked into this, everything's fine, that it's not being cheated. But I would think if, you know, over 4 million people are being robbed or cheated, or that would be concerning to the people that are in charge of enforcement. But we don't know what's going on. I could only hope that they're doing something behind the scenes, but I don't know. So right now, it keeps going on. And the price in June, it got into the 30s. And it's a bad feeling. But there's also an acceptance, like, that's not the real number. That's not the reality of AMC. And at some point, hopefully it's going to go up. I don't know when. Nobody does. But you'll see it. You'll see these every once in a while. It goes on these runs, these $8, $10 runs that, you know, were reminiscent of when the stock ran up to 70. Except now it's going from, you know, the low 30s to the high 30s, or, you know, it hits the 40s again. And it gives you a little bit of hope, but then it always goes back down. And a lot of people say this is deliberate. This is the hedge funds trying to frustrate people and to get them to sell out and sell their shares now. And everybody they get to sell their shares at, you know, $40, $30 range is one less investor they're going to have to get to sell, you know, if this stock shoots up to $1,000 a share, $10,000 a share. So that's what's going on. You know, reality hit home. And it's kind of where we are right now. That I don't know what's going to happen. I got into this. And I went all in, and I'll tell you about a moment. The first few episodes I did, I talked about that AMC stock. And my gut feeling was I believed in this play. And I have not risked more than we could be willing to lose. We could lose everything we have in AMC stock and survive. But it would suck. Nobody wants to lose money. I lose $20. I'm mad about that. Anytime you lose money, you're never happy about that. But honestly, you know, if you get into the market, if you are investing, don't, especially with a risky proposition like this, volatile, you know, play, don't risk more than you can lose, because you could lose it. It's like going into a casino. You know, if you have cash in your pocket, understand you might lose that cash. And speaking of Vegas, I'm going to tell you another quick Vegas story. I was in Vegas with some friends. And I wasn't doing real well. And I was down. And down to the point where I needed all the cash that I had brought for the trip was gone. And I had to go to the ATM and get more money, which is dangerous in Vegas. Once you start doing that, like, okay, I'm going to the ATM. I spent more than I said I was going to spend, and I just wanted enough money. We weren't going to be there long. This was the last night. We were leaving the next day. I just needed enough money to eat, pay for gas, you know, whatever, and get home. Like, my gambling and everything was done at that point. So I go to an ATM, and I get $100 out. And, of course, it spits out a $100 bill. Well, you know, if I'm going to pay for food somewhere, I'm not going to make them break $100. So I say, okay, I'm going to put this $100 bill into a 25-cent slot machine, play a couple rounds, and then I'm going to cash out like a $98 ticket, $95 ticket, get my change that way. So I'm looking around, looking for a 25-cent slot machine, and I see 25. I'm like, great. So I go up, I put my $100 bill in. I like to play the max credits in case there's like a bonus or anything. I always hate to hit the jackpot, and if I haven't played the max, then you don't get the jackpot, right? Or the bonus round, whatever it is. So I play, it's two credit max. So I play it once, which is 50 cents, no big deal, perfect for me. Play it once, and I don't win anything. And so I automatically, bang, hit it again. Now I notice a couple things at this point. At this point, all my credits are gone. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, I put $100 into this machine. It should only be 50 cents a turn. And that's when it slowly dawned on me. I had put the $100 bill in a $25 slot machine. And the first time I had pushed that button and lost, that cost me $50. Here's the other thing. The second time I pushed it, yes, that cost me $50, but I had hit the bonus round on the slot machine. I had won. And the way this slot machine worked, it was one when you hit it. It's kind of like Deal or No Deal in a way. When you hit it, it would tell you what you won, right? It would tell you the number of credits you won. And then you could select that, take that offer, or you could ask for another one. And you'd have four offers. You know, you'd get the first offer, and you could go through three more offers, and at the end, that fourth offer, that's what you get. If you've gone all the way to the fourth offer, you're going to get that. So, you know, look, you could start off with 100 credits, and you don't want that, and it goes down to 50 credits, and you don't want that. It could go down to 25 credits, and then that last offer, if you're willing to push it, it could go back up to 100 or 1,000, or it could go to, you know, 5 credits, and that's your final offer. You have to take it. So if you get a decent offer, you know, it's pretty smart to take it. And if you get a lowball offer, that, you know, go ahead and push it, because how much worse could it get, right? Okay, so the first offer I get is 65 credits, and this is a $25 slot machine,25 credits, I think it was, but it came out to $625 or $650, whatever it was. I think it was $625. So I just won $625. However, I could have got other offers. I could have pushed my luck. And who knows, could have been $5,000 offer, could have been $10,000 offer, could have been a $50,000 offer. But at that time, I had mistakenly put this money in. I'd spent all the cash that I had. And here had all of a sudden $625 fell into my lap, which was going to pay for my trip and then some, and send me home with a good story. And I just couldn't think. I was by myself, really. Luckily, an attendant had come up to me and brought it to my attention that I had actually won it. Like I said, it took me a second. So I thought about it for a few minutes, and I ended up taking the offer. I took the $600 because, you know, if it went down, you know, to 15 credits, you know, if it bounced around between 15 and 5 credits, I wasn't used to playing for that much money. I'd have been bummed that I'd missed out on this few hundred dollars. But again, it always stuck with me. And there was also, just like with the Facebook stock, it was like, wow, did I leave money on the table there? How much could I have really won if I had pushed my luck? And I think it speaks to my, you know, conservative, risk-averse financial instincts. That I'm, like I said, I'm, you know, financially conservative. That's just me. That's nothing political. It's just financially, I'm that way. I like to conserve my money. Again, nothing political. Just that's who I am. So anyway, When I got into this stock and I was looking at my Roth and everything, and I kept saying, you know, this is it. If this thing hits, you know, if it can, who knows, will it really get to $100,000 a share? A lot of things have to happen for that. Could it get to $300 like GameStop did, $400 like GameStop did in January, you know, 2021? Maybe they did it, and that's what I was counting on. Could it get to $1,000, $2,000, $5,000? Maybe. And with enough shares, that would have been life-changing money. So when I looked at that Roth IRA, and I was looking for ways to get more shares, and I kept chipping away at those mutual funds. Until at a certain point, I had basically gone all in for the on the mutual funds because I figured, look, if this thing hits, those mutual funds will not matter. If it hits and I've only cashed out half those mutual funds, then the other half of those mutual funds will mock me, as I said, I could have done twice as good. Like, let's say with the if this happened and the AMC stock that I was able to get, I got, you know, $100,000 from it. But if I had invested the other part of that mutual funds in it, I could have $200,000, right? So I went all in on my mutual funds. I just cashed them out. I invested them and was hoping for the best. And I figured, well, if it works out, I won't have to worry about that. Now, here's the other thing. I was curious how long, because the mutual funds took a day. If I sold the mutual funds, that money did not show up in my account until the next day. That's just how they close out mutual funds. It takes longer than a stock. I didn't really know that at the time. I was curious how long the stock would take to close out and get the money. So I did a test with one of my shares of Twitter, and I sold this Twitter stock just to see how soon the money would show up. And it was almost immediately. Once they sold the share, that cash showed up in my account again. I'm like, oh, wow, I got, and then I was like, wow, I got cash. And I invested that share of Twitter that I sold into AMC. And then I sold all my shares of Twitter because they really weren't doing anything. They weren't growing at a very high rate. So I cashed them out. And then as the days went on, I just kept pushing. I wanted more. I wanted more. I wanted more. I wanted more seats on the rocket. And I was looking at those 30 shares of Facebook stock. And I said, you know, these things have haunted me since I bought them. And I used to tell this, I tell the Facebook stock to a lot of people. And it was kind of a, at the time, a sad story. It was about regret and like, oh, I could have done this and I could have been a contender. And I said, you know what? You've haunted me for too long. And so I sold a few shares. And I used that to buy AMC stock. Then I sold a few more. Until finally, in the end, I had sold all the Facebook stock to buy AMC shares. Now, is that going to be a really bad decision? It might. It might. And we'll find out. But those Facebook shares are gone. And I'll be quite honest. You know, I don't want to get too political. But I had some real issues with what Facebook did during the 2016 campaign and letting, you know, Russia influence our politics and not doing anything about it because that would hurt them financially, or, you know, they don't want to, you know, raise ruffles. Like, look, whether you're Republican or Democrat, you have to protect this democracy. You have to protect our country against hostile foreign actors, period. Period. Right? We're all in our house, and sometimes we don't get along, but when the burglar comes knocking on the house, we all got to pull together and keep the burglar out. Right? Facebook didn't do that. They, you know, they let the Russians buy these ads and everything. So there was also a part of me that, you know, yeah, I made some money with Facebook, but I had an uneasy feeling because I didn't like what they did. But at that point, you know, I cashed out and I was all in on this. And when the stock was so down, the shares went down. You know, all of a sudden, you know, I was buying shares in the 40s and the 50s. And now the AMC stock was down into the 30s. So we looked, my wife and I, we pulled all our cash. We had a lot of little savings accounts here with, you know, a little money here, a little money there. And I guess if on a rainy day, if we ever needed it, we could pull it in. Well, you know, it was all hands on deck. We got everything we had, got it to our checking. I had a couple other stocks over here, and I sold those too to make sure that we would have enough cash. And I just kept upping our investment accounts in Webull and Robinhood until, you know, we had a pretty significant, you know, investment just in an individual broker account, non-IRA. And the point of that was, you know, let's say we did hit it and we got a lot of money in that Roth IRA, we wouldn't be able to touch it for 7 years without penalty, right? So that's why we wanted the individual account. And we had so few shares in there, we really have to hold on to them for a long time. So by increasing the number of shares, we got more options in selling those. So we really went all in, and that's it. So now we're kind of up to date. Now we're just waiting. And that'll be the next episode.